From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to the world's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, noted expert on near-death experiences, Dr. Raymond Moody joins us. I am looking forward to this one. Well, in spite of the controversy over Barry Bonds' possible steroid use tonight, he hit home run number 756, breaking Hank Aaron's record of 33 years. You know, I wonder how much the ball will go for. Mark McGwire, with the St. Louis Cardinals, when he hit his 70th home run of the season back a few years ago, that ball went for $3 million. My staff's been arguing around here whether they would keep the ball or sell it. How many people would actually keep it? Get the cash and run. In Utah, it's time to say a prayer for these six miners. They have not heard anything from them. No sounds, nothing. Seismic activity now has totally shut down efforts to reach six miners trapped below ground and has wiped out all the work done in the past day to try to find them. Still, they say that we should know within 48 to 78 hours the status of those trapped miners. Problem is, they don't have that much time. Rescue crews are drilling two holes into the mountain in an effort to communicate with the miners, provided they are still alive. Meanwhile, unstable conditions below ground have really screwed up rescuers' efforts to break through to the miners, who have been trapped 1,500 feet below the surface for nearly 2 days. At least 1 million pounds of suspected Chinese seafood landed on American store shelves and dinner plates in spite of a warning from the Food and Drug Administration, an order that came from the FDA that said the shipments first must be screened and banned because of drugs and chemicals. The frozen shrimp, catfish, eel arrived at U.S. ports under an import alert, which meant that the FDA was supposed to hold every shipment until it had passed a laboratory test. That, according to the Associated Press, did not happen. One out of every four shipments, the AP says, that they reviewed got through without being stopped and tested. The seafood, valued at $2.5 million, was equal to the amount of 66,000 Americans eating every year. A grandfather died in England because he had an infected foot blister. Why is this an important story? Well, it was caused by tight new shoes, leading to blood poisoning and eventual massive organ failure. 60 years old, he was given dressings by a district nurse on his sore toe. He was told it would heal itself, but just over a week later, the retired electrician suffered two heart attacks. He was taken to a hospital. They diagnosed him with blood poisoning. He died within a month. Can you believe that? A man smuggled a monkey onto an airplane, stashing the little fist-sized primate under his hat until passengers spotted it perched on his ponytail. The monkey escapade began in Lima, Peru, late Monday, when the man boarded a flight to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. After landing, the man waited several hours before catching a connecting flight to LaGuardia Airport. During the flight, people around the man noticed that the monkey, which normally lives in forests and eats fruit and insects, had emerged from underneath his hat. Other passengers asked the man if he knew he had a monkey on him. The monkey spent the remainder of the flight in the man's seat, behaved well, according to people who were in the area. Airport police were waiting for the man, though. They question him. We don't know if they're going to file any charges against him, and the monkey appears to be in good health, and it may end up in a zoo. A natural force caused, which has tiny particles sticking to one another, has been reversed by scientists, effectively enabling them to create a type of levitation. It's called a Casimir force, which is sometimes referred to as a sticky quantum force, which makes very small nanoparticles attract one to another. One example is the gecko's ability to stick to any surface with one toe. A pair of physicists at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland have discovered a way to reverse that force, meaning that they can make small objects repel rather than attract. And this happens right now, though, only in a vacuum state. Countdown continues for the launch of the Space Shuttle Endeavour, supposed to go up on Wednesday at 6:36 p.m. Eastern Time. Richard C. Hoagland will continue to monitor that situation. The bad weather that they thought could hit it seems to be pushing its way out, so they say there's an 80% chance Endeavour will be able to get up there on its mission for construction flight to the International Space Station. NASA scientists have proposed a spacecraft that would use atomic blasts to deflect asteroids on collision courses with Earth. The researchers from the Advanced Concepts Office at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, presented the idea at the 2007 Planetary Defense Conference. In a moment, we'll be talking with a senior scientist, David Morrison, about this idea of deflecting asteroids. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. David Morrison is the senior scientist at the NASA Astrobiology Institute, and he participates in a variety of research programs in astrobiology, the study of the living universe. Dr. Morrison received his PhD in astronomy from Harvard, and until he joined NASA, was the professor of astronomy at the University of Hawaii. Internationally known for his research on the solar system, Dr. Morrison is the author of more than 135 technical papers and has published a dozen books. He's our guest this hour on Coast to Coast. David, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to be here.
What an incredible story. It sounds like things that movies are made of, but that is to propose building a spacecraft that would generate atomic blasts to deflect asteroids. Will this kind of a plan work, David?
It's one concept that's being thought about, because as we discover more and more of these near-Earth asteroids, we do have to think about what we would do if we found one headed for us. Nuclear blast is one idea. There are several others on the table. Not much real work has been done on it because it's something that, fortunately, we don't have to worry about right now.
Why are we starting to think about this in not, let's say, 15, 20 years ago? Are there asteroids out there in the vicinity that could hit us?
There certainly are. Of course, it's the ones we don't know about that are the problem. 15 or 20 years ago, we'd hardly discovered any asteroids in the near-Earth space, the ones that come close to our planet. And as we became aware of the history of the Earth and the Moon being hit by asteroids ever since the beginning, astronomers have undertaken a search, a survey, to start to find them. And we hope to find the next one with lots of advanced warning before it actually hits.
David, I got to ask you this. Most of the asteroids that we identify, are they all because of the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, or are some of them coming from way beyond our solar system that happen to just come through?
The asteroids that we know about are all coming from our asteroid belt, the space between Jupiter and Mars. But the ones we worry about are those that have been knocked, deflected out of the belt into orbits that bring them into so-called Earth-crossing orbits where they could potentially hit our planet. If they stay in the main belt, fine. We like them. There's no danger. If they come too close to Earth, they become a potential threat.
Now, this deflector would be launched from low Earth orbit by an Ares V rocket, which would be NASA's next generation of these heavy cargo lifters. But that's not scheduled to go into service until 2020. Is that a little too long? You know, it's 12 years, 13 years from now.
We actually expect that if we do find the next object before it hits us, you'll have decades of warning. And if we don't find it, you'll have no warning at all. So there's not much in between. Either you have decades of warning so you can do a serious job of deflecting it, or the first thing you know is when the sky lights up and the ground starts to shake.
Well, you see, and that's the scary part, David. How would we, and why would we miss it? I mean, we've had stories where scientists report to us, well, it came close as it went past us. Why don't they see them coming in?
Well, we do when we survey, but they are very, very faint, and it takes a very high-tech kind of telescope to find them. There was no way 20 years ago we could have undertaken a survey. Now we can. Now we're finding them. We find them. We plot their orbits. We project their position into the future. And it becomes serious science instead of just speculation.
This is probability here, but what percent do you think we miss, we just don't see?
We'll see them all eventually. The point is, the survey is that you keep looking, and they keep coming by over and over. The next asteroid that hits us will have passed by the Earth hundreds, thousands of times before that. And our aim is to find it on one of those earlier passes.
Hey, David, what's your take on the asteroid belt? Do you think it was a planet that blew up or a possible planet that never formed? What do you think all that asteroid debris might be?
It's pretty clear it's a planet that never formed. I mean, all the planets in the solar system originally were formed out of asteroidal-type material, rocky stuff that collected together gravitationally. But in the space between Jupiter, which is the biggest planet, and Mars, the gravity of Jupiter basically stirs things up so they simply can't come together to form a planet.
Tell me about our current near-Earth tracking program. What are we doing there?
Well, we have a survey that we call the Space Guard Survey, which is targeted to find all the near-Earth asteroids bigger than about a mile in diameter. It's actually a kilometer is the limit. And track their orbits and find out for sure if any one of them is going to hit or not. Now, that's relatively large near-Earth asteroids.
And give me a size here. What are we talking about?
Mile or bigger.
Mile or bigger, okay.
And then the question now that's been raised by the Congress and raised by scientists and by NASA is, should we make a little more investment and carry out a survey for smaller objects, because there are a lot more of them?
What size object do you have to have impact the planet in order to create, for example, maybe a city-wide damage, for example? If you want to take out a city the size of a Wichita or St. Louis or something, what size asteroid has to hit right in that area?
Well, we have a good answer for that, because this sort of thing happened on June 30th, 1908.
Tunguska,
Siberia, the Tunguska object, and it exploded with the force equivalent to a big nuclear bomb, except, of course, it wasn't nuclear.
And it didn't hit the planet.
It sure did. Well, it exploded in the atmosphere.
Yeah, exactly.
Worse. You know, if you're into the military thing, you get more damage from an airburst than a ground.
That's true.
But fortunately, it landed in the wilderness. And as long as they come into the wilderness, they're not doing any harm. But if something that big, and it was about 150 to 200 feet across, if something that big hit us and happened to come in over a populated area, it could do tremendous damage.
What caused it to blow up in the atmosphere and not just come through all the way and hit the planet?
It simply disintegrated under the pressure. We think of the air as not offering much resistance. But when you're coming in at 20, 30 miles a second, then hitting the air is tremendous resistance, and there's a shock wave in front, and the object simply disintegrates before it can get to the ground.
And it sounds to me that this object, this asteroid, might have been more rock than iron. Is that a pretty good guess?
Right. We have another example that a lot of people know about, of an iron one 50,000 years ago that produced Meteor Crater in Arizona. And an iron object is strong enough, it makes it all the way to the ground.
Now, this Meteor Crater, how wide is that?
About a mile across.
It's a mile across. How big do you think the object had to have been?
It was about 120 feet across.
That's it? That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
That's why we think we'd like to carry out a survey and find these smaller ones.
All right. Mile wide, how deep is that crater?
Well, it's filled in a lot now, but I think it's about 500 feet deep.
Oh, my.
It's a big hole.
And we're beginning to find impacts, I guess, with satellite photography now, aren't we? More impacts than we thought.
Ancient craters, yes, but very few craters really have survived on Earth. If you want to imagine how much we've been hit, look at a picture of the moon. Look at those tens of thousands of craters on the moon, all produced by asteroid and comet impacts. The Earth has had the same bombardment over history.
And it's slowed down, I would guess. And give us a period of time here, David, when we were getting bombarded on a regular basis, and then when did it start slowing down? And why did it slow down?
Well, the Earth is about 4.5 billion years old. And for that first 500 million years, there was just lots of leftover junk building blocks still in the solar system. And that's what we call the heavy bombardment. And about 4 billion years ago, that initial stuff got used up. And we fell back to the kind of steady bombardment we have now, which is just a slow leakage of a few asteroids out of the asteroid belt to come into the inner solar system. So it hasn't changed much for 4 billion years. It's happened in the past, and it will happen in the future.
The planets, Mercury, Venus, of course, there are some that say Venus was a captured comet. I'll get your take on that in a second. But Venus, Earth, Mars, Are those planets generally the planets that are closer to the sun? Are they the ones that took the brunt of the asteroids during this period? Or do you think all the planets in the solar system got it?
We know from our spacecraft that have gone into the outer solar system and looked at the satellites of Jupiter and Saturn and out to Uranus and Neptune that there was a bombardment that was through the whole solar system. But you're right, it was heavier on the inner solar system because that's where the asteroids were.
Is there ever a danger if a huge asteroid smacks into the sun? Could it ever damage it, blow it up?
Nope.
Promise?
The sun is really, really, really big, and the asteroids, by comparison, are minuscule.
Okay, now let's go back then to the techniques of deflection. I have also heard that we might be able to aim a laser at an asteroid and move it. How could that work?
Well, in principle, but we don't have any lasers near strong enough. It turns out, you know, for a small asteroid, the technique is really pretty simple. You just run a rocket into it at high speed, just smash into it, and that'll change its orbit just a little bit. And if you do that many years in advance of the time that you're worried about it hitting, you can change its orbit and it will miss.
You know, we were talking about Venus, and Emmanuel Velikovsky has always believed, God rest his soul, that Venus was a comet, was coming into the solar system, got captured, and now it's where it is. What do you think of that?
I think it's crazy. I mean, you know, let me just start with the simplest thing. A comet is so described because it has a tail. And a planet couldn't possibly have a tail. It has a very strong gravity and holds onto the atmosphere tight. I mean, the basic concept of a planet having once been a comet makes no sense.
You know, we are so concerned with the possibility of all these unknown variables taking us out. What about right here on our own planet? Earthquakes, volcanoes, tornadoes, tsunamis, major Earth changes like that. Aren't they just as dangerous for us, David?
Sure. Sure. You know, this planet is alive. This planet has things happening, and there's always risks. The one thing that makes, there are two things that make the asteroid impact different. The first is that big, relatively big asteroids, things like the one that hit 65 million years ago that hit in the dinosaurs, are a greater catastrophe than any of these other things you mentioned, like tidal waves and the earthquakes. And the second is that this is the only natural hazard that we could stop. There's no way you could imagine turning off an earthquake or a hurricane. But if we find an asteroid decades before it's due to hit, we have the technology to deflect it and save the planet.
I got to tell you, though, David, I have had dreams that one day, you know, either while I'm on the air here or I wake up in the morning and see a city somewhere on this planet engulfed in flames because it got hit by an asteroid. I really think if it happens, and I'll put that in quotes, but if it happens, it's going to happen that way. I'll start getting phone calls from people saying, you know, I heard this huge explosion and I don't see Timbuktu anymore. Is it really possible? Can it happen like that?
Yes. On the other hand, that's why we're carrying out the Space Guard survey and these other programs, because over the next generation, basically, we can eliminate most of that hazard. And that seems like it's worth doing.
How quick, with the impact, would it evaporate us? I mean, if it hit us right now where I'm broadcasting, I mean, would I even know what happened? I'd be gone. We'd all be gone
pretty quick.
Yeah.
I mean, the effect of an impact is what you remember the old days when we worried about nuclear bombs and all that and civil defense. It's that kind of thing. An impact goes off. There's this big explosion, and within a few seconds, it's all over.
Everything's vaporized, basically.
Or at least knocked down.
Yeah. Well, that'll be it's interesting that I have you, and then we have a near-death experience expert coming up, huh? Next
Maybe.
Hour. Do you want to stick around for some phone calls, David?
Love to.
All right, why don't we do that? We're going to open up the phone lines now. David Morrison, our guest, he is a scientist, astrobiology expert, and we're going to talk about asteroids when we come back. I'll ask him, of course, the big question, what one asteroid is out there that we know of that could possibly be the problem for us. I think I know what he's going to say, but I'd like to hear it coming from his lips. And then we'll open up the phone lines. Here are the numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And for you wild card callers, 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Gosh, I am so delighted that our whole mission here to take care of Al Bielek, to help out Mr. Philadelphia Experiment, is working so well. You know, we're going to give you a free CD, a classic Art Bell show that Art said in his own words, the best interview we've ever done. And that program, Philadelphia Experiment, we're going to give it to you with an After Dark subscription when you call 1-888-727-5505 or go online, coasttocoastam.com. We're giving a portion of every sale to Mr. Al Bielek to help him during these financial rough times for him. It's one of those situations where we felt it was just so important to help Mr. Bielek at this moment, up there in age, failing health, cash flow crunch, and we're doing it this way. And I want to thank all of you who've been doing this for us over the last week, and I'm going to keep doing this as long as we can. As long as I continue to see that you are doing this, we'll do it. 1-888-727-5505 online, coasttocoastam.com. And we're with senior scientist, astrobiologist David Morrison. We're going to take your phone calls for the rest of this hour. David, what's out there that we know about that could be a potential asteroid problem?
You're parsing your words very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know of any asteroid that's likely to hit the Earth. We know of three or four that we cannot absolutely exclude the possibility, and so we'll continue to track them. The one that's best known, you've probably heard of, is called Apophis. And there is a very faint possibility that it could hit the Earth in 2037, I think it is, or 2036.
2036, and that thing's about 1,000 feet wide.
Yeah.
That's a biggie.
You don't want to hit. But we'll keep track of it, and if you're talking about probabilities, it's extremely low, and the only problem is our uncertainty in the knowledge of the orbit, which will improve over time.
What about the possibility of an asteroid not hitting a planet, but causing problems, let's say, with communication satellites and satellites in general that we have up there?
Well, sure, it can happen. And then Apophis is coming by lower than our communication satellites, the geosynchronous ones. But, again, why do we call it space? Because it's empty. And so an asteroid can whiz right through with a negligible chance of hitting anything.
Are we getting any support from other countries in the search for asteroids? Are the Europeans doing anything collectively? And why aren't we all doing this together as a team?
Well, that's a good question. We certainly get moral support, and there are university scientists in Europe and elsewhere that are working on it. But as far as the government making an investment, it's just the U.S.
That doesn't sound fair, David.
Well, you know, we are the world's only superpower, and maybe one of the things we ought to do is protect the Earth from asteroids.
Well, you know what? If they're not going to contribute, I guess what we should do is just not tell them if an asteroid is going to hit them on their side of the planet. I guess we can't do that, can we?
Well, I wouldn't want to do that. You can decide whether or not to put it on Coast to Coast.
Yeah, that's true. You know I would. I would. Now, that you have now brought up a very fascinating, complex problem here. Asteroids headed this way. Let's say it gives us 2 days' notice. That's possible, right?
Hardly. As I said earlier, you either discover it, in which case you have decades of warning, or you don't discover it, in which case you don't know anything till it hits.
Well, what's the farthest out time for the shortest time that we would know?
We would expect decades of warning.
Okay, so really then you're saying we won't get the one-day notice or two-day notice. Oh, my God, it's coming.
One-year notice. I mean, I can't say absolutely we won't, but it's extremely unlikely.
Okay.
The much more likely thing is the decades.
So what you're saying, though, is this thing that's coming from millions and millions of miles away is not going to get within a day or two from us, and then we find it all of a sudden.
Yeah, there's nobody looking, you know, at that way. There aren't a bunch of of folks out there, astronomers with eyeballs searching the sky. And so this last-minute thing, we just wouldn't like to see it coming in.
Well, what would you do if you only had one day left, though, David? If you knew it was going to hit us?
I think I'd open a good bottle of wine.
And do you think I should broadcast it and let the world know, here it comes?
Sure. Then everybody can open a good bottle of wine.
As long as we go get our bottle before anyone else, right? West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yes, George, you have an absolutely wonderful show each night. I absolutely love listening to it.
Well, thank you.
I have a question here for David Morrison.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember the movie Meteor, Mr. Morrison. Sean Connery.
Sean Connery, right.
Now, with a situation like that, of course, you know, they had about a week. Now, if you actually fire nuclear warheads at an asteroid like that, of course, that was a big chunk of rock. I mean, is that something like what you're talking about?
Well, it's what I'm saying is extremely unlikely. But, you know, you couldn't make a good Hollywood movie out of something that had decades of warning. So you'll always find in the Hollywood movies that it's a quick thing. Yeah. But realistically, no. And realistically, I can't imagine shooting nuclear weapons at an asteroid that was just within a few days of hitting. I don't see how that would do any good.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, that movie was one of those movies that I'll always remember, and it really held you on the edge of your seat, especially when the political warfare started going, you know, the Russians arguing with their comrades, and then our politicians. Well, you kind of get the theory.
Yeah, I'd say that it was a good movie, but you don't get good science from movies.
Okay. Another final question I have here is the Arizona crater. Now, when that one hit, how approximately big was that one?
Well, it hit about 50,000 years ago, and it was about 30, 35 yards across.
That's it?
Mostly of iron.
Oh, my God. That's a tiny rocket. And the one that's floating out there right now is, what, 1,000?
1,000 feet, yeah.
1,000 feet. Okay, guys, thank you very much for taking my call. And, George, keep up the good work.
Okay. How far, what would we hear, let's say an asteroid of 1,000 feet, David, hit in another country, okay, somewhere in Europe? Would we hear it here instantaneously? Would we feel a vibration or anything like that?
No. It's you're talking about an asteroid that could devastate, a state, a few counties, whatever, but it wouldn't have any global consequences.
6 miles would?
Yes.
Okay.
6 miles would really put the Earth in bad shape, because that's what happened 65 million years ago with the dinosaurs. Most creatures on Earth died.
First time caller line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, how are you doing?
We are well. Go ahead.
Good. My question is for David. The theory of a black hole being caused by the explosion of a star, is that plausible? And also, what is the difference between a black hole and a wormhole?
Wow. You probably would do better to get your answers from an honest-to-goodness cosmologist. But yes, black holes can form, not usually from the explosion of a star, but they can form, and the ones that, of course, are really cool are the ones in the center of galaxies, which just eat up all the stars around them and get bigger and bigger and bigger.
And a wormhole, isn't it more of some kind of portal?
It's a hypothetical thing. I mean, we've never seen one. I don't know if we'd know one if we saw it, but the physicists tell us it's possible.
Well, yesterday I had a story where four galaxies were converging on each other. They were going to form one big one. It's almost like they just gobble each other up. And Richard Hoagland was on the air with me last night, said it's possible that has happened to us here in the Milky Way, a converging of several other galaxies. It's incredible what happens out there in the universe, David.
Yes, and you know, we will hit the Andromeda galaxy, the biggest one close to us. Not for quite a while, but that is a collision that's almost sure to take place.
Wildcard line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good, thank you.
It's Ray from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay, sure.
All right, I've got a question. You're saying we're going to deflect these asteroids and not really destroy them. Now, when we deflect them, do you know what angle that you're going to deflect them? And if not, do you not care where they're going to go and they might end up hitting Venus and destroy them?
Hey, I sure do care, and it's a good question. So we'd like to do the deflection with a certain amount of precision so that we can make sure that, when it leaves the Earth, it'll be go off into a different orbit that won't come back. It's not too hard to do, but you're right. Let's not just swat it in a random way. Let's do it the right way.
Okay, and David, blowing it up might not work because then you may have hundreds of smaller asteroids coming our way.
That's right. Certainly blowing it up at the last minute is no help. Now, maybe if it were far from the Earth and you really blew it apart, the individual pieces would each go off in own individual orbits and not hit us.
At this point, the asteroid deflector idea, the atomic idea, is that the best way?
It is one way. I think it it probably is the way we would do it if we had a big asteroid, and it's not the way we do it with a small one because it's a very imprecise method. And besides, we've never done anything like it. We don't know how to do it. And it would be a very risky thing, although if a big asteroid were headed toward us, maybe you go ahead.
Speculating between now and 2036 when Apophis comes by, though they say it will come close but will not hit us, it's going to come close in 2029, even closer in 2036. I would guess that between now and 2029, for example, we could find more asteroids that may be on a collision course with us. Isn't that true?
That's absolutely correct.
East of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. How you doing, man?
Good. We're all well. Go.
Good, good. This is Cody calling from Conroe, Texas. Man, I work nights. I got to let you know, your show has really saved me on several occasions.
That's what we're here for, Cody.
Well, I've got two questions. My first one is, at what diameter does an asteroid become deemed like a global killer, universal killer? The second question would be, have you noticed a lot of political red tape? This should interest some of the higher-level officials, you know, people who keep an eye on this kind of thing. Have you noticed a lot of resistance, I guess, from the higher-end political leaders to make this a huge issue, like global warming and immigration and such, that this could be a global disaster and should be treated like one?
Hmm. Good question.
You would get a global disaster if the object were much bigger than a mile across. I don't mean it'd kill everything, but we'd feel it. We would see the sky go dark, and we'd probably have crop failures over the whole world. So about a mile to a mile and a half is the threshold. As far as resistance is concerned, it's taken a long time for this to be taken seriously. But remember, it's NASA, a federal agency, and the U.S. Air Force that are supporting these searches, and the Congress has supported it. And so, it's slow, but I think there's support there.
David, if we knew it was coming toward us with mathematical precision, could they tell us where it would hit and
yes.
when it would hit?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Because of computers, maybe?
Well, yeah. Again, you're supposing that we have made enough observations with visible telescopes and radar that we'd get a really precise orbit. And then you will know where it will hit and when.
Okay, so if we had, let's say, a 10-year head start, and they said it's coming to Moscow, and it's 1,000 feet wide, which could take out the entire city, I assume.
Yep.
Would they start to evacuate right away, even if they had 10 years, or would they simply wait to see what they could do with this asteroid?
I haven't the faintest idea. But I hope that people would actually mount a defense and not just evacuate. But you know, we've never faced that problem.
No,
it will be a real challenge when it happens.
Could you imagine? I think people would panic, David. I really do. If they knew today an asteroid was coming their way, even though it was 10 years away, I think they'd panic. Some people, maybe not all of them.
Well, I don't know what you mean by panic, but it would sure be bad for property values.
Well, yeah, it would be bad for property values. Insurance companies would hold back. But I think that there would be looting and civil unrest and everything else.
Maybe, but, you know, when we've had had other disasters, usually people have stuck together and helped each other, and it's been altruistic and pretty effective. I don't know what to predict.
Man, You could just imagine a movie. Well, of course, we've had movies like this in empty city. Let's say they all left except for cameras that they had strategically placed all over the place. And down came the impact, and that was it. Boom. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
You remember that movie in which a comet wiped out Phoenix, sort of like that?
Yeah.
TV movie?
Yeah. Well, that was the one that pretended to be a live newscast, wasn't it?
I don't think so, but maybe.
There was one like that. I didn't like that.
Listen, there have been a lot more impacts on television in Hollywood than in recent.
And bigger ones, too. Moving ahead, first-time caller line. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi, guys. Earlier, you've implied that the asteroid belt couldn't form, you know, as a planet because of the proximity of Jupiter. I was wondering how far is the asteroid, you know, the asteroid belt from Jupiter, and you know, is Jupiter newer? I mean, you know, not as old as the asteroid belt, and if so, if the asteroid belt never formed as a planet, how come, you know, Jupiter has moons that might as well, you know, be considered as planets? My second question is also, do you believe that there is some sense to the cosmos as far as planet the trajectory of the galaxies, or do you just believe that it has no rhyme or reason?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that second part. You know, it is what it is, and it follows the laws of physics. And whether that means much to us, I don't know.
But the
question of the asteroid.
Yeah, why didn't those pieces gel together?
Yeah, well, the asteroid belt is a region. There's a big gap between the orbit of Mars and the orbit of Jupiter, and so all of the junk that's left over in there is sort of controlled by the gravity of Jupiter, but it's a different process than forming the moons of Jupiter. And this, you know, the scientists who crank through the equations and do that will tell you that the asteroids are there because nothing bigger could form.
Well, how can we say, though, David, that it just didn't form as opposed to some kind of an object that might have blown up? How do they know that didn't happen?
There's no evidence of any object having blown up.
Well, how would there be evidence?
Well, we have pieces of the asteroids. Remember, it's little fragments of asteroids land on the Earth as meteorites.
Sure.
And so we analyze those. We use our telescopes to analyze the asteroids.
So if it blew up, you could tell by some of those pieces?
They're different objects. You can trace back the history, the age, and so forth of the so-called parent objects that the meteorites came from. And there are hundreds of different parent objects. They were never part of one planet.
All right, so what's our biggest warning here? What do we do?
What do we do about what?
About asteroids, of course.
We carry out the survey that we're doing, and we expand it to look for the smaller ones. And then maybe someday we'll want to spend more money and think about actually developing a defense system.
Is this a well-funded program at this date?
It is a funded program, which in this business is the important thing. Clearly, if you spent more money, you could do more surveys. It's a political decision as to how much it's worth spending.
Man, we've got to get the United Nations, which doesn't do much, to kick in and get all these nations together, because this is a planetary issue. It's not just one country. It's not just the United States.
That's right. What the United Nations has been doing is starting to talk about the issues you raised. What happens if you find an object and you predict a time and place of impact? How does the international community respond to that?
Absolutely. Hey, David, thank you. I love talking to you.
A pleasure.
David Morrison, he is NASA's astrobiologist. I'll be back in a moment. We're going to be talking next with Dr. Raymond Moody about near-death experiences. And if he was a baseball player, he would be in the home run league beyond anyone else. He's next on Coast to Coast AM.